Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Politics here on the radio, our network is about 27 stations. We are really glad you guys are interested in our opinions as to what's going on politically. You know, this last week, Jim did an editorial, about 20-minute daily editorial, where he explained how he feels about the U.S. government. I felt that it was a very, very important editorial, and I have asked him to condense it, his thoughts a little bit, so we can cut it down to 20 minutes, and cut it down to 9 minutes, and play it in the introduction to the show. I'd like you radio listeners who probably don't get a chance to hear the daily editorials to know where Jim is coming from. It's pretty interesting. Jimmy, you have the mic, sir.
Yeah, well, you know, our discussion this week has really been focused around the Department of Justice and the efforts, the absolute unbelievable and unprecedented efforts by the Department of Justice to go after a former president of the United States. And what's really going on, in my view, in my opinion, my analysis, what's going on in the nation right now with the Democratic Party, or I won't even say it's a Democratic Party. I think it's people inside Washington that want to protect the way the system works, and it's rather a corrupt system, unfortunately, and that includes Democrats and Republicans. However, there's a very strong effort by both Democratic leaders and then even more nefarious people, in my view, to change the direction of this nation. And here's my basic thesis. So you're hearing Jack Smith, you know, the special prosecutor, has filed charges, or at least is expecting Trump to show up before the grand jury by the end of this week, based on the January 6th issues, and basically accusing him of inciting insurrection. We don't know the specifics of what he would file against him, but that's the general. The general idea is that he was trying to influence Congress in order to change the outcome of the election. We don't know what the specifics will be until they're actually shown, but it's a pretty damning statement. However, it's a political statement. And here's what I think is happening with all these attacks on Donald Trump in the most recent efforts. And I think it's backed up somewhat with some evidence and some facts. I think that the Democratic Party doesn't just want to get Trump nominated so they can beat him. And that's a lot of pundits. That's what they're saying. Oh, the Democratic Party's just trying to get Trump, his base, excited to win the primary so they can beat him again with Joe Biden. I don't think that's an accurate assessment. I don't think that they are going to be successful in putting him in jail, because there are precedents in Supreme Court cases about politics, recent convictions that have been overturned by the Supreme Court. And I think that Jack Smith is going down this road probably more for the show rather than the actual successful effort to put Trump in jail.
Right.
I don't think they're going to get him in jail, and I don't think that they want to get him nominated because they think, you know, Biden will beat him. Here's what I think they would like to do. They are doing exactly what they did after the November election with inciting Trump supporters, or I shouldn't even say Trump supporters, because they're basically people that want to believe in the Constitution and believe that our system is actually legitimate. What they're trying to do is incite some event, some very powerful, disturbing event, where they can crack down and use law enforcement to silence their opposition and to probably do even more, like grab your guns, to take away individual rights and to continue on with the censorship programs that they have.
Let me throw this out at you, Jim. I don't think they have to do that much, and let me tell you why. I went to a current events program yesterday at my home, and I have to say that the fellow who puts it on is, I think, very, very, he's pretty liberal, but I think by the same token, he knows what he's talking about in terms of the hard facts about the current events. For example, The event that was just reported this morning on the wire services about Russia contemplating cutting back on grain exports was discussed yesterday, a full 24 hours before it hit the wire services by this fellow and my group.
It was actually I watched it all week on. All weekend long, they were talking about it. The Russians made that announcement last week after the attack on the bridge. So that's not new news. And I will say, I'm not sure what you mean by they're not going this. They don't have to go this way. But I think that using law, there's three fundamental principles that I think and strategy directions that the Democratic Party has used in order to basically crush the opposition, because ultimately that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to crush the opposition.
If I could just interrupt you for a second, I didn't make my final point in my last comment, but my final point I think is very important. We discussed the possibility of Trump getting elected in 2024, and the fact was brought up that the Democrats can really probably not get as many voters out as Republicans can, and that would preclude Donald Trump from winning the election. He could get a huge amount of the votes as he did in the last election, a huge amount. But the fact of the matter is, Democrats now are a lot more successful in getting out the vote so they can just win by numbers. You agree with that?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Because I think what they're more successful at, they are successful at going out and collecting ballots. They are successful in somehow manipulating the system in order to achieve success.
Yeah.
But I don't think that they are going to have a lot of motivated people, and it's very clear with the polling, to go ahead and support Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there will be a lot of moderate Democrats, a lot of people in the middle and independent voters that are going to say, you know, I just don't think we're going in the right direction. And those numbers are very clear. But again, what the Democratic Party is trying to do through three fundamental principles, crush the opposition. And here are the three principles. Number one, change the demographics in the United States. That's why they're allowing massive border influx. And when you get massive border influx, you get 7 million more people, then they go to places where there's no voter ID, then it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to have those people vote, but there will be ballots available to be able to look like the population can be manipulated and actually win. So that's one. Number two is they're actually using the power of the federal government through executive fiat, through law enforcement, Department of Justice, EPA regulation, the IRS, and every one of these federal agencies in order to support their agendas and stop the opposition.
Uh-huh.
And that's what's happening with Donald Trump. And the third fundamental method that they're doing this with is control of the narrative by having the media, a very cooperative media, supporting their objectives. And this is a very small group of corporate editors making a difference in order to push their agenda. And by controlling that message and the propaganda, they are able to crush the opposition. And that's exactly what the Republican leadership does not understand right now. So it's a difficult time in American history, and we will see where things go. But right now, the Democratic Party is basically trying to take away any possibility of an opposition.
I listened to your editorial about five times yesterday, and I happen to agree with you, but I happen to think that they're being relatively successful at this point doing that. Stick around, you guys. We're going to be right back.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Continuing on with KER Politics, featuring myself and Jim McKinney. Want to tell you, last segment, you know what we talked about. We talked about Jimmy's views as to what's going on in the political America that we all live in every day. We're going to take this segment and we're going to talk about how you can actually make a difference. I'm going to let Jim do that. Jimmy, how can we all make a difference?
Well, I think we want to first talk about how we are making a difference and how, you know, what things are happening out there that a lot of people don't see because the media is really trying to keep it down. You know, they're trying to kind of keep it covered. But I think a really good example is the in the last 24 hours, a big row over Jason Aldean's song, Try That in a Small Town. The song is basically, it came out in May. It talks about basically, hey, you know, don't try to rob and steal and burn things down in a small town because we're not going to put up with it. It won't last long. It's a really good song. I would recommend everybody listening to it. But more importantly, he came out with a video. And in that video, he just shows a lot of rioting from the 2020 BLM riots, the Antifa riots, a lot of robberies, a lot of violence. And basically, hey, we don't accept that in a small town, and don't try it in a small town. But the left is going nuts. They're attacking him, and in fact, to the point where country music television, CMT, actually banned the song from being shown to appease the left. And again, here's an example of huge pushback, because immediately the song has gone to number one on the charts within 24 hours. It's got over a million views on YouTube, but it just came out. And I imagine within a few weeks, it's going to have well over 10, 15, 20 million views. Because it's a good song, but it also kind of captures that feeling of, man, we want to get control of our nation back. So you see that happening right now. So Jason Aldean is making a stand, and he's not backing off of it. He's actually said, hey, look, you should know my politics. I've been talking about it for a long time. Another example of pushback is this movie Sound of Freedom, and that's Jim Caviezel starring as a man named Tim Ballard, who was a Homeland Security, basically a guy that was out hunting pedophiles and left his job in order to go down and start rescue children because he was frustrated and just like felt he needed to do it. And basically, God was driving him to do it. The movie is an amazing movie. I think everyone should watch it. I think every child should watch it. It really focuses on South America, but they highlight in the movie the numbers in the United States of missing children and abused children, and, of course, the child trafficking that goes on because of the open borders.
Yeah.
Again, the media tried to shut it down. There's been really negative, I mean, unbelievably crazy negative reviews in left-wing magazines like Rolling Stone and The Guardian and some other newspapers that really tried to undermine it. It was only a $14.5 million movie. It's already made over $85 million, and by this weekend will probably have made over $100 million. So people are going out to see it, and the word is spreading in spite of people attempting to try to silence it through censorship and push it down. So here's examples of pushback.
And the great examples, you know, Jimmy, I have to tell you, I would like our program to become more of a pushback avenue. I really would. So what that means is we have to get back David Horowitz, who's very definitely a pushback guy, and some of the other people. You know, Caviezel is an interesting guy. He's very, very moral. He will not allow any obvious sex in his movies. Sexual innuendos are not even there, and they obviously wouldn't be. I have a lot of time for Jim Caviezel. Jim is from Spokane, Washington. Spokane, Washington is a very conservative town, but a very wonderful town in eastern Washington. It's the only voting district in Washington that consistently votes conservative. Jimmy, in your travels about Washington State for the party and for the party candidates, have you ever done anything in Spokane?
Yeah, I've been out there. Actually, not for political actions, but for business events and some other things. I've been out there, and it's very, very supportive, very good place. And it's well organized and doesn't have all the problems that other places in the state do. However, the left is gaining ground in the urban area in Spokane,
it's changing. It is. Yeah, it very definitely is.
So the pushback issues, Al, I think, you know, Bud Light, Anheuser-Busch has been losing millions and millions of dollars, and their market share is continually dropping. Another example. So what you're seeing is people beginning to say, you know what, I'm tired of the woke politics. I'm tired of you getting involved and pushing these agendas in my face, like Dylan Mulvaney, the transgender individual.
Right.
And you've got to see how it's going to have an impact. It did in the state of Virginia in the governor's race. The attorney general and the lieutenant governor, those were like powerful to change the whole direction of the state of Virginia. A very, you know, it was considered a strongly deep blue state, certainly with Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
You know, you're starting to see those changes. The big victory by DeSantis in Florida, you know, by 19 points over Charlie Crist.
Yeah.
You're seeing pushback, and it starts at the local level. It starts at the school board meetings. It starts at the local city and county council. It starts not allowing your superintendent and your teachers to start teaching these ideologies, Marxist ideologies, to your children.
Right.
And really what you're seeing is change, and that's where we have to go as a nation in order to protect us from the censorship.
I agree, Jimmy.
Overreach of government.
I agree 100%, Jim, on that. By the way, getting back to the major event that's happening right now, and that's the song in a small town. We have provided the link, the link to that song on our website. See if it doesn't get your blood to boil just a little bit. Jim, we got a minute left. Why don't you wrap her up?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, people need to remember what happened in 2020 with the COVID lockdowns. And not only 2020, but after 2020, when the Democrats took control of the House, the Senate, and the White House, and they continued these restrictions. And, of course, the summer of 2020 with the George Floyd and BLM Antifa riots, which destroyed thousands of small-town buildings.
Well, I happen to agree 100% on that one. It's about time. I'm starting to get a little fired up, and that means there is something very definitely happening. The only thing you and I are promoting is morality and honesty, and I will never stop doing that. You guys, time for a top-of-the-hour news break. We'll be right back.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Top of the hour news is over. We're now talking about opining, I guess I should say. Want to be real careful what we say in this environment. We are simply opining on what's going on in America. You know, I just got back from a fairly lengthy, in terms of hours, trip into downtown Seattle, where I was undergoing some treatment at my providers. And I have to tell you, I had plans to take the light rail into Seattle by myself, just go in there tonight, maybe have dinner, have a couple of drinks, etc., just kind of, you know, get my feet wet on the streets of Seattle. Basically, you know, provide a new environment so maybe I get a fresh outlook on life. And I have to tell you, I'm not going to do it. And the reason I'm not going to do it is because it's too damn dangerous. saw it with my own eyes today. Let's go a little bit south. Let's go 175 miles south to Portland, Oregon. My daughter was down there picking up a pooch with her sister, and they stayed in Portland, which was, she said, the biggest mistake I ever made. She said, "Dad, downtown Portland is uninhabitable now." And she said, "You're taking your life in your own hands in Portland, Oregon, if you just go in and visit." Jim, something's got to be done about this. It's getting, and it's almost too late, but something's got to be done. You got any ideas on that?
Well, I think you're right. Something has to be done, but it really comes down to the individuals that live in those communities, whether or not they're going to accept that type of life, or whether or not they're going to stand up and say enough is enough. It usually takes very dramatic problems and a decline significantly before people will take action.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it takes there's a lot of damage, a lot of economic damage, a lot of urban blight that goes on before it starts to turn up. And of course, you know, we saw this in the 60s and the 70s in a lot of the urban areas around the nation. They really declined heavily. Crime was skyrocketing. And it really took until the 80s and the 90s before it started to climb back up.
Yeah.
And then there was a lot of investment in downtown areas. There was a lot of excitement about people moving back into the urban centers. But unfortunately, in these major demographic cities, progressive ideologies, especially after the BLM and Antifa riots in 2020, you're seeing a rapid decline in quality of life and a massive movement of economic drivers out of those urban areas. San Francisco is a perfect example.
Yeah.
Hundreds of major corporations have moved from downtown San Francisco, moving to Texas, moving to other areas around the country. But, you know, they haven't felt, the city has not felt the impact of the lack of revenues from those businesses yet. They will in the next couple of years. And of course, California overall is facing that dilemma, as they're now at a $33 billion, possibly $36 billion deficit after being flush with money just 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And of course, so ultimately what your question here is, it takes political movement within those urban areas to finally say enough is enough. And unfortunately, you just don't see much of that happening because of the organized efforts of progressive vote harvesting and these pushes in these urban areas and these major demographic areas for basically uncontrolled lack of voter ID, uncontrolled elections, and a continuation of decline that will be only stopped when people finally stand up and say that's enough.
And you're suggesting that the only way for that to happen, or for the only way that that could happen today in America, is through a civil war. Is that right?
No, I don't say that's the only way that's going to happen. In fact, that's the worst possible outcome.
Of course it is.
What I think the way it can happen is if people actually stand up and get politically involved and change the politics and say, you know what, I'm not going to accept that. I'm not going to reelect Ted Wheeler to downtown Portland, you know, as mayor,
yeah,
who created these problems. You know, I'm not going to, you're starting to see a slight movement away from the progressive ideology in Seattle, but not enough yet because it's still a disaster.
Yeah, it is.
You know, remember what happened with Daryl Dinkins, with the, you know, New York governors for years. Was just a disaster. And then they finally got Rudy Giuliani in as mayor of the city. And within 2 terms, he cleaned it up.
Yeah.
He cleaned it up. So that's what it takes. The problem, again, is the electoral system. And my so one way is, and the best way is the political movement.
Why is the electoral system a problem?
That's the only way it can be fixed without violence.
Okay.
But if there's no voter ID requirements, if it's mail-in ballots, if there's, you know, voting machines that you cannot actual actually count or audit effectively, which is what happened in Maricopa County,
right.
What is happening in Oregon, in Washington, and in California. If you don't have systems in place, then you can't trust the electoral system, you know, the election system.
Yeah.
If you can't trust the election system, you don't know if you're actually got a population that's fed up or not, because the people that control the system will continue to control it, and you'll get a continual decline.
Yeah.
And part of it is incompetence. Leadership in those cities are incompetent. And of course, the other alternative, Al, is the worst case scenario is civil war. But I tell you, there are a lot of people that are so fed up with the system and don't trust it, they either won't participate or eventually they'll break. And that's what I don't want to see happen.
When you see they'll break, you mean psychologically, and they will engage in activities that are really dangerous?
Well, exactly. And this is what happened in 2020 with the George Floyd issues. That was orchestrated by certainly activists and supported by the media,
yeah,
and directly encouraged by Democratic politicians. The same politicians like Ted Wheeler in Portland, like Gavin Newsom, like Nancy Pelosi, like the mayor of Seattle, who actually by either actively asking to defund their police organizations or encouraging violence and riot. Remember the mayor of Seattle calling it the Summer of Love when there was a total, complete anarchy in downtown in the area you're in right now,
right,
in Capitol Hill with the CHOP and the CHAZ.
Yeah.
So they, politically, they should have been thrown out, but for some reason in those areas they weren't, and that's why you can't trust the electoral system. So when I say people are going to break, they're going to get violent because they got to protect themselves, they got to protect their lives, or they'll leave, which is what's happening in many, many places. In the room to places
I have to say this, my youngest daughter drove me into my medical provider, and as we were driving into the city, as soon as we got off on the freeway and turned left onto Denny Way, I was actually getting incredibly uncomfortable because of the people on the streets. And I tell you, I'm getting sick and tired of that, because if it's happening on a scale of 1 to 10 in Seattle, it's happening on a scale of 1 to about 2 in San Francisco and L.A. Does not bode well for the United States, Jim.
No, and just real quickly here, because we only got about 20 seconds left.
Yeah.
In many of these urban areas, they've downgraded felonies to misdemeanors. They've taken away responsibility for the cops to be able to arrest people for the small things. And the small things is what creates the problem, because the people that break the laws, they continue to break it if they're not held accountable. And that's what we're seeing right now around the nation.
Stick around, you guys. We're going to be right back with these really optimistic ideas. Okay, guys, we're back here to wrap up the Cornell Economics Report. We got about 10 minutes in this segment, so Jimmy, the microphone is yours, sir.
Oh, sure, Alan. You know, hopefully you'll ask questions as we go along with this. So I think there's a real question in my mind. Ultimately, what will the impact be to America if this weaponization of government, using the Department of Justice, using the angle, very obscure angles in the law in order to attack your political opposition. You wonder where that will go. And in our nation, where you have a lot of alternative news and media sites that, you know, the Democrats and progressives and the country, actually the government, have a tremendous influence over the major media corporations. And a lot of that is because the major media corporations are dependent upon their listeners, and their listeners are primarily in those dense urban areas, and they're kind of more progressive or left. They don't want to lose their subscribers, like the Washington Post and the New York Times. So they're afraid to actually publish anything that might counter the narrative. And of course, there's tremendous ties with government officials really since the Obama administration, where the government will directly contact and provide information to the media and the journalists, and the media and the journalists just take it because really they don't have any analytical teams behind them anymore because the competition's so tight.
Right.
At the same time, you've got global corporate entities that really are looking at entertainment, and we've talked about this many times, but the potential for other global markets. So you've got this kind of nexus of the government, the corporate leadership, and then these media people, that kind of triad that push a narrative. However, in America, you do still have the Breitbart News. You've got, I won't say Drudge anymore because it's kind of bought out by the corporate entities, but you've got Citizen Free Press. You've got the Daily Wire, I think, is a very valuable news media outlet now that's getting more and more support. Newsmax, OANN, you know, these different networks that are beginning to rise as Fox and CNN and MSNBC begins to fall. So the question becomes, can this effort by a centralized government from basically pushing an effort to control the narrative and basically decapitate their opposition by indicting Trump in multiple ways, by threatening and intimidating Trump supporters, or actually just Republicans in general, will they be able to do this without creating basically a division that creates, you know, violence in America? And I don't, especially with the types of declines we were talking about the last segment in these urban areas, I don't see how they can actually successfully do this over a long period of time. I don't think they can control it that far, Al. I just don't think they can, in spite of their arrogance.
Now, Jimmy, when you say control, define that term.
Yeah, so when I'm talking about actually controlling the narrative and controlling the population and then using the Department of Justice to push back. I mean, so by using the Department of Justice and the EPA and the IRS to target their political enemies, do they actually think they're going to be successful enough to silence all opposition in America? I don't think that they'll be it'll be possible for them to do that. I pray they won't be able to do that.
Right. Well, it's such an all-encompassing societal mess right now. I really don't even know where to start, Jim. You know, I would just suggest listeners, get in their cars. If you live in the Northwest, take a visit to Portland real quick. If you live in kind of central Washington, take a visit to Seattle. It's what I have seen is terrifying. I was not anywhere nearly as upset just a couple of weeks ago until I started traveling into these cities and having discussions about these cities from professional friends of mine. And they all say the same thing. Interestingly enough, whether it's Seattle, Portland, or San Francisco, they all say it really is a bottomless pit of slime.
Well, let's say they're successful in eliminating their competition, their political opposition. Say that the government, using the media with corporate financial support and these rules that they've put in place that allow anybody to vote and almost no oversight.
Yeah.
Let's say they're successful. So what's the outcome? And this is where it really becomes, you know, do you want your city to be like Portland? Do you want your neighborhood to be violent? Do you want to have no police when you call 911? Or do you want your institutions and your economy to continue to decline? So the example that's being set by these leftist progressive ideologies is not good. And of course, throughout history, that's been the case with every socialist movement throughout time. Every single one has failed miserably to benefit its people. So what's going on with that? And it's hard for me to understand why you have Democrats that continue to push these agendas, that push the racist agenda, that push the gender issues, that push the open border issues, when it undermines their own communities. And I don't know if it can last without either a huge political pushback, which will cost them dramatically if, in fact, it's successful, because all of a sudden they'll be held accountable with the same standards that they're trying to hold their opposition accountable now, which would be ugly, or we get into violence, and you know, and we've already seen it, and we're seeing it on a broad level in the crime increases, but you also saw it unbelievably in the summer of 2020. So I'm a little disappointed with that, but I'm also still, there's some bad news out there, Al, but then there's some good news.
Give me some good news, Jimmy.
Okay, so let me start with the bad and then finish with the good. So 90% of the population in 2021 had faith in God, still believed in God, according to Gallup polling. Whether that's accurate or not, I don't know. So the bad news is it's only 74% in 2023. But here's the good news. The good news is it's still 74% of the population that have faith in a higher power and some basic moral beliefs. Now, is everyone perfect? No. Are they all make mistakes? Are we all human? Do we all sin? Absolutely. But ultimately, there is still a majority of Americans that believe, even the majority of Democrats, that believe in something higher, and maybe these efforts by the Democrats to push these basically ungodly, sinful policies down people's throats will push back on them. And hopefully, if we can get enough information out there for people to question the narrative that is being pushed by our government, that is being pushed by these corrupt individuals and being pushed by this corporate tyranny, we'll see some change. And when you see the Bud Light, you know, pushback, when you see the pushback against country music television on the Jason Aldean video, when you see a very large number of Americans that are beginning to say, you know what, I just don't buy into this. You see the school board meetings pushing against the sex education for kindergartners through third graders. You're seeing a movement that will be started and continue to grow as long as there's more people out there that believe there's something more important than just power.
Well, I'll tell you, Jimmy, the problem is the school board meetings, in my opinion, from what I've seen, people feel that's a very constructive way, an effective way to make changes. I have seen zero changes in the schools, Jim.
Well, certainly in Washington State, you're going to not see much because it's a bad, deep blue state. But Virginia, they're making headway. In Florida, they're making headway. In South Carolina, they're making headway. They're pushing back. And I think that's what we're going to see at a grassroots level, moms and families saying enough is enough.
Well, I hope you're right, Jim. You guys don't mean to just pound negativity out of this program, but you almost have to right now. Going to be back next week. Hope you're with us.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.